You ready?
Yeah.
I'm Austin Lugo.
I'm Andrew Harp.
This is With Nothing to Say.
Let's talk about 40 guns.
Before we get into this week's film, next week we're going to be watching 1954's Godzilla, the OG, in preparation for the new Godzilla movie that's coming out. What is the name of the new Godzilla movie?
Godzilla minus one.
Godzilla Minus One. So I've only ever seen one Godzilla movie before, which is the 2014 Godzilla movie. I didn't even see it in theaters. I saw it at home, maybe like a year or two later. I was still in high school, so it had to be like our senior year. But my Godzilla meter, it's pretty low. But you've seen quite a few Godzilla movies, haven't you?
Not really, no. Not in
No.
relation to how many there are. Like I've seen like all like the new American ones that they've made, which is like three, right? Like, but I mean, like if you actually like look and see like at the Godzilla, like you like what is it? Like cinematic universe, right?
Cinematic
Like since
universe.
the 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of Godzilla and like Godzilla adjacent. You know, kaiju movies.
Yeah.
So, no, not really. But I have seen the first Godzilla movie.
Yeah. I'm excited. Anything I should know going into this movie?
It's good. Well, yeah, it's
All
just.
right. I'm ready for a good movie. I'm always in for a good movie.
Yeah.
The last time we watched like a monster movie? I'm trying to think.
I
I
don't
guess maybe the probably the last zombie movie, I guess, would be the last monster movie. Which I'm thinking what the last zombie movie we watched was. Was it oh, what was the name of that movie? I don't know. It's been a minute, though.
I don't I mean, I don't know really either. Yeah, you know, it's sort of a monster. I mean, yeah, like Godzilla is a monster.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of depth to the movie than maybe people would expect going in.
Right. I've heard the many misgivings, as it were, about the original American edit, which I assume is no longer
Oh yeah,
a
I've seen
thing.
that. Yeah, I've seen.
Yeah.
No, I've seen the. I have seen the American edit. I think it's like Godzilla King of Monsters or something like that. No, I've seen that movie before. And it's just really funny the way that they edit that.
Yeah.
All they basically do is that they chop up the original movie, and then they get this American actor, this white guy. They shoot a bunch of like footage of him like basically reacting to scenes in the original movie. So it'll be like a scene from the original movie that's like cut up and chopped off of like them talking about Godzilla, and then they'll cut to the white American guy like, whoa, like reacting to what's going on. It's so fun. It's really funny. It's worth watching just because like it's really funny. But like yeah, it completely doesn't yeah, it's like kinda it ruins a movie. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Maybe I'll try to watch it in preparation for Godzilla just to talk about. But this week we watched one of my favorite directors of all time, someone whose films we haven't watched on here, but we
He
have
fucking
seen in
rocks.
a film before, the great Samuel Fuller. Of course, we
Yeah,
watched
we watched
in
him in American Friend.
American Friend, which is another great movie by, of course, Wim Wenders. But Samuel Fuller's just so incredibly
He's a
amazing.
crazy
He's
motherfucker.
he really is. And one of the things I love about him, and maybe this has like some sort of nostalgic to him, is he's one of the first big name directors, or like, cinematic directors I discovered when I was in film school. And what's funny is I didn't actually discover it from film school. Like, we didn't watch any of his films in film school, nor have I watched it in any academic realm, which I think is a shame because I think his films are very worthy of studying. I was at home in Denver, Colorado, living in this tiny little dorm, and I was looking for a movie to watch. And I think the first one I stumbled upon was I Shot Jesse James, or whatever the name of that one is. I can't remember the exact name. It might just be Jesse James. No, I think it's I Shot Jesse James. I don't know. But it's a Samuel Fuller Western, and it's one of my favorite Westerns of all time. And I immediately fell in love with the myth, the legend, Samuel Fuller. So I was very excited to see this film. I hadn't seen it before.
It's cool.
And you haven't seen this film before either, yes, have you?
No, of course not. No. Yeah. I saw Shock. Yeah.
You've seen Shock Corridor, though.
Yeah. I've seen Shock Corridor, which, from what I've, like, when looking at it, like a list of his, like, movies, like, just kind of like giving like a cursory, like, look of, like, at the titles and, like, kind of some of the movies he's made. This Shock Corridor seems to be more of like an outlier, it seems, because he mainly makes, like, and also White Dog also seems like an outlier too, which I haven't seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, he like makes like a lot of Westerns and like war movies. It seems like very masculine.
Yeah. He's a very guy, manly very director.
Masculine, manly director, right? Like very and you know, this movie in particular, 40 Guns, I was reminded of another manly director, John Ford.
Oh yeah.
And his movie specifically, I was reminded of their styles are very different, but I was very much reminded of the John Ford movie we covered, My Darling Clementine.
Wow, that
that was very rare. What?
No, I'm laughing because I was so reminded of that movie while watching this movie that we're actually showing that movie to my kids next week, My Darling Clementine, because of 40 Guns.
Yeah, and I mean, My Darling Clementine is a better movie, obviously. But yeah, I'm very much reminded of 40 Guns and how, you know, it kind of has the same kind of conceit, like of like guys going into a city. Both movies take place in like the same like kind of like small like location in the West. You know, there's some movement, but for the most part, it's in the same area for the most part. Has similar kind of like iconography and images as well. But again, styles are a little bit different. Quite different, maybe, if you can say, more or less. You know, different kind of like psychological things going on too. I would say like 40 Guns is like a very distilled psychosexual Western.
Yeah.
But like My Darling Clementine is more of kind of like a movie about, like, I don't know. It's more of like a routinely.
It's like a traditional love story.
It's a traditional love story. You know, it's a movie about like masculinity and violence. That movie is probably a little bit more reserved, patient. 40 Guns, I wouldn't say, is a very patient movie.
This movie, man, only 1 hour and 20 minutes. So what? That's like 80 minutes. It goes by so quickly, and there's so much stuff going on. Like, I spent most of the movie just trying to figure out
the what plot is going really on. Doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't. Like, it really doesn't. And you know, for a movie like this, it typically does, right? Like, the story and characters typically does. But like, you especially, and probably me at this point, I've seen enough of these like movies to where it's just kind of like. Like, I don't, like, yeah, I get it. You know, like it doesn't really matter. It's like, when you're in the movie, you're in the movie.
Exactly.
And I could, like, and I do, I guess, have, like, a few misgivings about it. And I guess that is one of them, is the fact that, like, it is kind of, like, a confusing movie. For the most part, it's pretty simple. But it comes across as complicated, but it's really simple. Like, the story is, like, it's pretty, like, typical Western shit.
Boilerplate, right?
Yeah, but it's like, it's fine, you know. It's nothing like incredibly, I guess, you know, it has its moments, of course, you know, and that's not to say that it has its moments, but despite like maybe like a few misgivings that I have about it, you're still like there, you know, like you're still like there in like the crazy like 1957 black and white Samuel Fuller wide what's it called, like Cinescope or whatever the
Cinemascope.
where it's like it's advertised at the very front of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like you're like in that kind of realm, and I like being in that realm. Like, it doesn't really matter to me, like, if it is like a weird impatient movie. It's perfectly it's completely suitable compared to basically any other movie that's come out in the past like 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that you could wish you could see in a theater, right? You just need that like giant screen to be consumed by. Although I argue that for really almost all Westerns, like Westerns are just, even when they're shot in the 4:3 aspect ratio, like most of John
I'm thinking
Ford
like
stuff.
The Searchers, like, or mm-hmm. something like that. Like John, yeah, like this movie and like John Ford movies would be great in the theater. Like I think Scorsese talks about seeing like John Ford movies in the theater and being blown away by it. And I mean, yeah, that's a pretty, that makes sense to me. Yeah, you would be blown away.
And Samuel Fuller, it might just be that I saw a lot of their films around the same time, but I find his style to be very similar to Elia Kazan's work too. Like, I think partly too, is just they both shot in CinemaScope. So that's just such a unique, like, equipment, I guess would be the best way to describe it. That when I'm talking about like CinemaScope, because so few films were shot in CinemaScope, so it was so insanely expensive and made like no money.
Kind of sweaty too.
Yeah,
they're both their movies are kind of sweaty. I'm not seeing like a ton from each of these guys, but their movies are kind of sweaty and they feel very like, I mean, they're very mid-century, like turn of like their movies feel like very end of the 50s and beginning of the 60s sort of, even though like there's not really a big difference for the most part, but it feels like a change, I guess.
It's like the end of an era, right? Because like the 1950s, and I think this is something that both directors kind of play with, because they started out as directors part of the studio system, and that's
like
kind of
the
how
tail end,
both careers, right? Exactly, like at the tail end, and then a lot of their work happens like during the large movement of the early 1960s and the independent movement and American New Wave and French New Wave and, you know, 10,000 other new waves. And so they're kind of towing this line of being part of the studio system, having kind of these very big films and also playing with the more sort of independent aspects to it. And this film also reminded me of a like Zahn film called Something Baby. Oh, it's going to bother me. Let me see. I need to look up this film. Elia Kazan. What was the name of the movie? No, I don't care about the movies he was in. Only the ones he directed. Baby Doll. I think it's like the psychosexual thing that you were talking about. Like, Baby Doll is a very sexual film in this weird way. And I think that's, I don't know, there's like something kind of creepy in the sexual tension in this movie. Like, it feels weirdly.
She's wearing sexual. She's like almost like she's like got a, like a whip. The Barbara Stanwyck character has like a whip.
Yeah. She literally has a whip.
Yeah, and then like literally, and there's a character who sings a song about how like how awesome she is, even mm-hmm. though she's like kind of like a tyrant, I guess.
Yeah,
they like that though. Like it's like
they're into it.
It's like a they like yeah they're into it. They like
the
like
dominatrix,
the tyrant,
right?
The dominatrix, yeah, the domineering woman, yeah. Yeah, which it feels unusual given
the time period
type of movie that you're watching.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. It's great. But it is very strange and a very sexual film. And I love that scene early in the movie, which, by the way, I've noticed with Samuel Fuller's work, and I've seen a lot of his work, is he is someone who really loves music, particularly folk music. And I think that's part of the reason why he made so many Westerns, is he's just really loves kind of that old-timey ragtime you know, guitar yowling sort of thing going on. And that moment where every moment where someone's singing, and at first it feels like it's part of the score, and then he does
right,
the thing
like
every time
still,
and he does it,
it's so cool.
He does it in all of his
twice.
Movies
he does it twice
he does it twice, and this is something he does in almost every movie I've seen of his, because he loves this moment as he pans over, and of course like they're actually in the film. There's a word, diegetic.
It rocks.
Sound. I love those.
Yeah,
moments.
Like he. I don't know why. Yeah, like he does that twice. It's crazy where he tricks you into thinking, yeah, like it's a part of the score. But yeah, like you said, it's like in the movie, it's diegetic. You're just mm-hmm. like, oh, okay. Like, all right. I love how he does it like twice. That seems almost like too much to me. But I don't care. Like it's
Who
cool. Like I
cares?
don't know. Like stuff like that. Stuff like that. Like the like you said. You know, Samuel Fuller is like worked made a lot of movies and he worked for a long time. 40 Guns, like it feels like it could be kind of like a generic Western, but it still feels like it still comes across as like very expressive, like on a personal kind of like director level.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that is just so weird and specific to me. It doesn't feel right, but because it doesn't feel right, it feels like,
Perfect.
yeah, it feels perfect, you know, like it's just it kind of it feels expressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the one thing that I love, particularly about Westerns, is it's a extremely large genre. And there's so many filmmakers that when they make Westerns, it's just this classic boilerplate ABCD. And so when you have these moments like a Samuel Fuller who take something that is so generic, and I mean, literally by this point, I mean, there's hundreds of Western films that have been made. And so, you know, the country and the world has been inundated with these types of films. And yet he can come in and still make something that is distinctly himself and his own. Which is every moment of this film. I mean, whether you love it or hate it, like, it's very much a Samuel Fuller film.
Yeah, it's a it's I just don't see how you could hate it. Like it's just kind of
I
it's
don't
so
either.
it like I said, I just really like the expressiveness of it, and I just kind of like the cast as well. I think the cast are kind of like they're well utilized, and they act so crazy. And I just think too, like Fuller's like his use of like long takes in the movie are very like understated. Like the one where the guy kills himself, that's like a 5 minute long tracking shot of like it's just like three people talking in a room, and then it becomes two people talking in a room, and then it like pans over to like a discovery, and then that's the end of the scene. Like it's not like a Touch of Evil where it's like a long tracking shot where like
Extremely
50 things are
convoluted.
happening. Yeah, and like there's like this guy and they're like oh you know like everybody's like coming in and out of like the frame. But like it's still like impressive, and yeah, it's like still like an impressive calculation to watch, and that's a good important scene because like it's just like it's like so much still happens in that scene, right? Where it's like they're like hanging out, and then he almost gets shot, and then the guy comes in, the sheriff guy, right? He comes in and he confronts them, and then he gives that long soliloquy about how much like he's like a man or whatever. Like that character is so pathetic, and like the speech is so pathetic. It like feels like so like I don't know. Like it's so badly said or and badly written, but in a good way, as if he really is like thinking like off the dome. Like he's like. And then he moves away, and then they talk to each other about like, wow, that was crazy, huh? You know? And then he like, and then they with the sound of like the boots hitting the
The
wall,
sounds,
like
yeah.
that's just a crazy sequence. Like it just doesn't, it doesn't, it shouldn't. Like I don't know why like it has to be a long take, but it is.
Yeah.
It's just so cool.
It's an incredible moment, and it reminds me of this conversation that I've been having with some of my students, because I'm lucky enough, even though that I don't teach a film course, I have a few students that are very interested in making films and have actually gone out and, because of the way of the world now, like they can, you know, grab their friends and grab an iPhone and actually shoot short films. And so I had a student who shot their first short film out in Dayton, and it was cool. They like shot a Western, and it looks beautiful because, you know, they're shooting in 4K, they're shooting in literally a desert, right? Very beautiful space. And one of like their hangups, and one of the things I talked to him about, is like, how do you make a movie that isn't just like people sitting around talking? Because that's like sometimes you think like that's kind of like what movies are, is like people just sitting around talking with the camera in front of it, and making that into like something that's more than just that. And that's why I love with a piece like this, where like so much of the movie isn't action scenes. I mean, there are some great action moments, like at the beginning of the movie when he walks towards the guy with the gun. incredible moment, right? He doesn't even pull out his gun. He just like walks straight towards him and he has the shot of his feet. And he's like, I know that walk. Yeah. But
that feels like him walking feels like it takes forever.
It feels like he's
like so far away. But I love it because it asserts that character's power.
Yeah. It's a perfect moment and a series of perfect moments, because this movie really about, which is so strange for a Western, and kind of is playing with the idea of a Western, because Westerns are so much about manliness and how violence and aggression is like proof of our manliness, right? We think of The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, or almost any John Ford movie with John Wayne in it, how, you know, the hero is the guy who kills people, right? Who has the fastest gun in the West, right? It's a very conservative genre. And this film, which is very much Samuel Fuller, if you see any of his films about war or even Shock Corridor or a lot of his stuff, he has this view of violence being this terrible thing that haunts you. And so even though at the beginning of the movie, you're presented this classic cowboy, right, who's so everyone's so afraid of him because he has the fastest gun in the West that he doesn't even need to shoot his gun. But we come to learn that he's terrified of killing people. Like, he can't do it anymore, and he doesn't want to do it, and the killing of people haunts him. And he kind of has like his lackeys, or, you know, the people that are kind of with him, his brother and so forth. Like, they're still like excited by violence, and he's like, no, like, violence is this terrible, awful thing, and it will haunt you forever.
Yeah. And, you know, that's interesting too, because we were talking a little bit about kind of like him and like Fuller and like other directors are kind of like working at like the end of an era kind of a thing of like the studio system or whatever. But, you know, this movie in particular, and it's almost made like explicit in the dialogue of it, it's kind of like an end. It feels like kind of like the end of like the Western genre in general. Like, Barbara Stanwyck, the Jessica Drummond character in Griff Bunnell, they literally, you know, she literally tells Griff Bunnell, the Barbara Stanwyck character, like, you know, like, this is the, like, I think she says something along the lines like, this is the end of the frontier, right? Yeah. Like, they're like, and like, Griff Bunnell, he's like a season like guy, right? You know, it almost feels like there are like 10 other movies you could have made with that character, right? And there was, you know what I mean, like, in different, you know, they just all weren't named Griff Bunnell or whatever. But yeah, it's like kind of like a you know, it feels kind of like the end of an era, sort of like the Western genre, right? And again, I feel like this is explicit, like, in the movie textually as well. So, you know, I find that very interesting, and that's why I think it feels so distilled as well.
Yeah, and there's something almost meta cinematic about this, right? It's sort of giving a wink to the audience, because of course Barbara Stanwyck is one of the most famous actors of Westerns. I mean, she's in so many Westerns, and she plays right the same sort of character, the femme fatale type character, or the love interest type character. And so it's almost like she, as she's getting older, right, she's acknowledging
she's like a little older,
the fact that she's aging, right? She's not the classic 18, 21 year old, you know, girl who falls in love with a much older man. It's just, which is kind of also in this playing on sort of the older woman, and also, as you're saying, like, the end of frontier. And so it's like Samuel Fuller is acknowledging that this is sort of the end, not necessarily of Westerns as a genre. I mean, we still make Westerns 60 or 70 years later, but the fact that, like,
the way that they are now,
or the type of, the type of Western, the John Ford-esque Western, like, it's dead. It's over, and it's time to sort of move on. And by casting Barbara Stanwyck, it's the perfect casting choice, because it's telling the audience, like, this is literally, like, you're seeing the death of an actor who's like, that they can't play this role anymore. Like, this is kind of the end of this role for them, and this is the end of this era for this genre. And it's a really intelligent use, not only of writing and acting, but even casting, which we don't often talk about. Often when we talk about casting, we're like, they were a great choice because they're a good actor. But what's incredible about this casting choice is it's literally playing on the audience's understanding of this actor, not as a character, but as an actor, which is a very strange thing to do that we don't do often in film because it feels so off-putting, but it works perfectly in this film.
Yeah, and often we talk about like a movie kind of like playing with like your expectations, and I think this is one that kind of does that, like with the title 40 Guns, mm-hmm. where it's like the Jessica Drone character. She comically has 40 guys that follow her everywhere, like she of like 40 hired guns ready to protect her because she's like a landowner. She's like a she has like a fiefdom in this town or whatever, because
she
like,
literally
owns like a business
the town, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, and so like she gets to do whatever she wants. Yeah, and so and she has like a fucking army or whatever. And you know, I'm thinking of like the movie like Stagecoach, right?
Yeah,
like the great John Ford movie Stagecoach. That movie, it does what the title says. You know what I mean? It's a movie about a stagecoach.
It's a stagecoach
on a stagecoach the entire time. And you know what? It's a Western too. You know, and you know what? There's a lot of action on the stagecoach, and there's a lot of like running around on the, you know, it's very clear. In 40 Guns, there's never any like, you think like, oh man, is there going to be like a big thing where all the 40 guns get to like, you know, shoot out and do like a big thing? There's never really anything like that at all. There's never like a big kind of like climactic, like basically like war type level shootout scene ever. Really the 40 guns are really just used for like comedic effect, essentially. Like with the dinner scene.
They have that long panning shot where there's like literally 40
It's like one of the funniest
people.
Scenes of all time. It's just so, it's so funny when they pass like the note to, oh, that is so good, bring it here, like embarrassed, and like, but everybody treats it, everybody's like completely serious, like it's not like,
oh yeah, it's deadpan
scene, but it is so funny, it's so good.
And you know, that reminded me of this thing that I didn't really think about until now talking about it, is all of the quote shootout scenes of this film are so anticlimactic. Like often you'll have this sort of big you know, rise to like, oh, this is gonna happen and we're all excited.
Yeah.
And then when the shootout actually happens, it's like it's quick, it's silent, and it
are you talking about the one at the very end?
Well, I'm talking about all of them. I mean, even the one where
he's
up in the window and he's about to point out, right? You have that great like sort of like, oh, like what's gonna happen? It's gonna be a big shootout, and
they're
then he
still,
just kills them, right?
They still surprise you. They still have like their surprising
moments, absolutely,
which I like. Yeah,
I mean,
they're not.
It's a strange way to play with violence, because it's not, again, kind of going back to this idea that it's not celebrating these violent moments. I think, of course, of the one of the greatest shootouts of all cinematic history, and certainly of Westerns, and The Good and Bad and the Ugly, right? That final moment. You have the swelling music, and it's like 20 minutes, right, of them waiting to
and
shoot
like, or the or the end. Or yeah, and like the end of My Darling Clementine, like that's like kind of like a perfect positioned kind of like configuration where of like these guys and like these different like set pieces that are moving around, and they kind of do that with like the shootout of when where they're like up in the window and they're gonna like shoot down on him from behind. That almost kind of feels like a My Darling Clementine type scene, but there's not, the buildup is like kind of awkward, and then it kind of ends. Like it just sort of stops, you know, where it's interrupted like in the middle of it.
Exactly.
And it's like a trick too. It's not like a it's not like a like this like masculine like you and I are about to duel. It's like we're gonna trick him and then shoot him in the back of the head. And then but the trick is interrupted. Which that probably happened more often than any in the actual history of the West, which, you know, didn't last a long time, that probably happened more often than any kind of like shootout between like two people where they're standing in front of each other. You know what I mean? Like where like, hey, let's trick this guy. We need this guy dead. Let's trick him and shoot him in the back of the head. Like that happened probably way more often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that scene with the gun in the window, I love the actor who is hiding behind the corner, right? You can kind of see the
chair
in his eyes, right? The guilt of what he's about to do. and how like, so many
get,
of these characters.
He doesn't want to get killed either.
He doesn't want to get killed, and he feels bad about killing this guy. Like, he doesn't feel like he's part of it. And but it, yeah, they're good. All part of this system that they can't, like, break out of. Like, I mean, it's literally a sort of fiefdom. And I think the best expression of that, which is arguably one of my favorite scenes in all of cinema, because it's a perfect moment, very early in the film, right? The guy goes to prison. I think Charles, is that his name or something? I don't remember. I don't remember any of their names ever.
Are you talking about the like which guy? Like
the
her
brother.
brother. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Like at the very beginning of the film, because you know he's being a terrible person. He's put in prison. And they walk in.
Yeah.
Virus Starwick walks in and like they're like, all right, here's like the guy does like the whole judge thing. He like knocks his gavel. And literally,
yeah,
like
so
as
weird.
He's going through it, like they already walk out. Like the
it's such an impatient. It's such like an impatient like movie. Like the movie itself is really impatient, and all the characters feel really, really impatient, right?
Yeah.
Like there's no like I think every scene is like that, where there's like no, yeah, like you said, like they're just like they just leave, like they don't sit there and listen at all.
They leave before even the verdict is made. Like it's,
yeah,
the world is already built in a specific way and they know how everything works that they don't even have to wait for a verdict. Like that's a perfect moment of showing how much they control everything. Like you don't have to have this big convoluted thing, right, where people are sitting around, they're like, well, they own this and they own that, right? Instead, like that moment is the perfect representation of the way the town is run and how Barbara Steinwick basically like decides, you know, who's the governor, who's a senator, who runs all these different things.
Yeah.
And she is the law, right? There is no sheriff. Technically there's a sheriff, but right, these people are secondary to sort of her wealth and power.
Yeah, that character is kind of weird too, because it like doubles as like the antagonist of the movie essentially, but also as the not like a femme fatale, but like a no, not like that. It's just like she's like stumbles as like an antagonist and also as like the love interest of the main character.
It's very
which
strange.
Is very interesting. which is interesting when you in thinking about like these types of movies. It doesn't really happen. That really doesn't happen very often. That's another very unusual and kind of interesting part of it that I really like.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the reason why I found this movie to be so confusing plot-wise, which, again, you know, we talked about that. It doesn't really matter because it's such an enjoyable film, and who really cares about the plot? But he's, like, angry at her, and, like, she's supposed to be, like, the bad person, but then also she's the love interest, and there's this weird, like, back and forth.
I think it's just because, like, the movie is just, like, really rushed. Like, it's just,
it
like,
is.
A very, like, there's not really, like, a lot of development in terms of, like, the characters and their relationships with each other and their romance, I guess.
And there's
too,
so many.
There's
so many
lot
characters.
Yeah, there's 40 guns. There's over 40 of them, so. But, like, yeah, it's just, yeah, that might be, like, the one thing, again, that holds me back a little bit is that it's just so impatient. It's just a very impatient movie. And so you kind of feel a little like left out of like what actually happened, I guess. But even though it's still pretty simple what happened, like technically. But again, despite that, you're like there. And while you're there, like, how can you complain? Like, I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. I love looking in the background of films, like at certain moments. Just because, like, I love watching the paid extras, especially like older films, because like that was a job that people had to have, and you know, directors like tell them to do things. And you talk about this film being impatient and rushed, and if you watch any of these background characters, first of all, this is an incredibly busy city. Like, there's just people walking around everywhere all the time. Very different than like your classic Western where there's like six people in the whole town. I mean, this one, there's just like people going every which way all the time.
There's quite a few people in it. They have the bathhouse, which has like 40 baths in it of like people taking baths.
Bathhouse is great.
That again, I don't know why like he feels the need to do it twice. Right, because you're in, because they're all taking a bath together in their beginning individual in the like basins at the beginning, yeah. And then they do it again later. Towards like that's such a weird, funny thing to do.
It's perfect. What'd you say? I love it.
No, I love it too. It's such a weird kind of like particular thing to do it twice. It feels like something mm-hmm. that a normal director wouldn't do twice. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh man, I love Samuel Fuller, and if you watch his background characters, like they walk very quickly. Like everyone has yeah. like a very specific purpose. Like they're going to do something. It's like everyone in this film is just so like rushed to be on to the next thing. And I agree with you. If there's one thing that I'd love to see more of in this film is it could have definitely used an extra 30 or 40 minutes just because it moves so sure, quickly and there's yeah, so man. Much going on. And you'd just be 40 more minutes in this world. It's just insane.
Yeah, but again, like, but when you, but like again, like you just said, like the world is great. So it's hard to complain too much about it.
Yeah.
And you know, I think like that impatience too, even sort of like, like kind of gleams into like the final shootout, the quote unquote shootout where, like he's like taking his own sister hostage and he's like, I'm gonna, you know, and using her as like a shield. Cause like yeah. he's basically, he is going to die because he killed a marshal and everyone saw him do it. And she's like, I really can't do anything for you. And so he uses her as like a shield and he's like, you're not going to shoot her. And he does. And it's like crazy.
He doesn't even hesitate. He's just like, bam, bam.
No, there's no hesitation. Like there's no like, wild. There's no like moment where, I don't know. There's no like a spaghetti western moment where they're like the eyes are like exactly. moving around, you know, like yeah. he just lets it off.
And there's no even like nod or wink to her, because you know you kind of see that sometimes where like, don't worry, like, you know, duck at this moment or do this. It's just like, nope, yeah. just immediately shoots her.
and yeah, he's like a shock too. like he's as shocked as we are of him like shooting his sister.
And that moment. Which I couldn't help but laugh when the brother is shot and he goes, you killed me. And, yeah, he, and then he continues to shoot him like four more. I'm killed.
He killed. Yeah. He just like unloads like his whole gun into him. Like, just like, all right, that's it. And like he just completely kills the hell. He just shoots the fuck out of him. Like, it's crazy. Like, again, it's not like a really big thing. It's not like a heroic moment. Like,
no,
the characters just like come across as so pathetic in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like that character, the sheriff character, like everyone just kind of like lives and dies pathetically.
Yeah, there's no heroicism in this film. It's as if the whole idea of the West is sort of shattered. Like, we've created this facade, and he creates this facade at the beginning yeah. of the film of what a Western should be and how, you know, we see the world. And then he sort of, right, he lifts the veil from our eyes as a will, and they're like, no, this was like a terrible time to be alive, and it was awful for
it sucked.
Everyone involved.
I guess the Griff Bunnell character is like very heroic. He is like, I guess he is like a stereotypically heroic sure. guy, but by the end of the movie, he's like, I don't really want to do it anymore. Like, I don't really like killing people. It's not, I'd rather be a farmer is essentially what he decides to do.
It's good for him.
Right. Yeah.
Man, I love the music so much in this film. Oh, yeah, and really, I don't know if I've ever seen a Western where I don't like the music, but I don't know. There's just something about that guitar playing, yodeling whole thing going on it's perfect. And that ending where they just like, he like rides off on his...
The end is basically My Darling Clementine, right? Like, that's pretty much the ending.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
He leaves, and then she runs after him and then gets on it, and then they're off for new adventures, wherever, to be a rancher or whatever.
it's weird because like they kind of forgot about like what she was like before, like turns into like a different character entirely. Like they kind of forget about all of her transgressions.
That moment's so strange because like she's
like penniless now.
Yeah, because but what confuses me is right there's that moment near the end of the film where like she goes, you don't see it, but like they talk about it after the fact that she went to like some federal agency thing, and she like told them a bunch of, she like confessed to a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, she confessed to a bunch of stuff so she could, I think she had tried to get her, I think she did that to try to get her brother free.
I see.
But it, I don't think it worked.
But it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so now she has nothing. Okay, that makes sense. Like, I thought that was going on, but then, like, I didn't really understand if she was angry with her brother or, I mean, obviously she was.
No,
but, like,
I think she's, like, completely resigned, like, I think she says in the movie, I'm going to do anything I can to get my brother out or whatever. Like, right. even though she's like angry with him and thinks he's like a dickhead, like she's still like, it's still like a
still
thing.
Your brother.
Oh, he's still my brother. So I got to help him. And yeah, when she goes sees him, like at the end of the movie, she's completely resigned. Like she's completely like, I really like my hands are tied. Like I did everything. Like, I'm sorry, but you're done. Like you're going to get hanged.
Yeah, and they open that gate and he runs out, and for some reason, like, I don't know, maybe if you have a prisoner, like maybe you don't just like maybe put him in handcuffs or something instead of just opening the door. And of course, right, he grabs a gun and that's when he holds her hostage, which is a great moment because like she hugs him and it's like, oh, like,
right, and then
he's resigned to his fate, or
and then he
whatever,
beats it up and then he like he beats up the guard or whatever very easily because he like turned his back for a second. Yeah.
Wow. What a movie. What cinema.
Yeah, it's a crazy movie. Yeah, it's just like a good like nice wide black and white Western movie where you get great close-ups. You get great kind of long tracking shots. You get good images of the American West. Everything feels like really big and large. Even though in reality it's not, but to us it feels gigantic.
Yeah. So I feel like this is a good point to sort of wrap everything up, give some final thoughts. Okay, I'll go first. As I've spoken about many times on this podcast, Samuel Fuller is one of my all-time greats, one of my favorites of all time. I just think everything he does is wonderful and magnificent and beautiful, and 40 Guns is no exception to this. It is a beautiful film. It is a funny film. It's always playing with our expectations and what it means to show a Western and what a Western is sort of in the modern 1957 era, and these changing ideas of masculinity and violence. And it's really just so wonderful in everything, and this sort of meta film thing that they got going on, and the music, and there's just not enough amazing things to say about it. And my one big complaint, which we've talked about multiple times, is that this film feels rushed. It feels like there's 30 or 40 minutes of this film that's just missing, and it makes it a bit of a confusing film, and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what's going on before just accepting it. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter what's going on. I think that's the best way to experience this film, is just let go of this idea that you're going to understand every little thing that's going on, because it's so quick and impatient. And so I'm going to give this film a very high 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I think for me, it's also an 8 out of 10. It's just kind of like a good, solid, like, it combines both kind of like the, like I said, the great kind of like Western kind of like sensibilities, like at a surface level, you know, great black and white photography, you know, music, locations, kind of, you know, thematic elements as well. But I think it also like kind of like on a more kind of ingrained level includes like this kind of crazy, sort of like weird sensibilities of Fuller and kind of like the weird decisions that he makes. And I just really like that combination. And, you know, despite, I guess, like my foibles with it, it doesn't really matter. It's still just like a great movie. So, yeah, I mean, you know, 8 out of 10 for sure.
All right, y'all. Thank you for listening. You can find everything I do at Austin Lugo.
I'm at Letterboxd at RetroRanger, RTR0Andrew.
And you can find this podcast wherever you hear podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at With Nothing to Say or Life Through Fiction. Also on our Patreon, patreon.com/withnothingtosay.com. And thank you all for listening.
Thanks again.